Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. Together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic, Med Spa that's located here in Pace, Florida. Today, we're going to be talking about something that I wouldn't say it's necessarily popular, but I think it's something that most of us have heard about at one point or another. It's something that we've seen in the news pretty recently within the past few months. Back in October, there was a trial about it, and it was related to a death that was involved a cosmetic procedure, and it was illegal silicone injections. We've personally had patients that we've treated with it before. We know people who've been treated successfully, but these are people that are being treated with illegal substances. Why are you laughing at me?
I'm laughing because you're on a totally different topic than what I was on. As often, if you guys watch us, you know that Jerry and I, we do have a little bit of communication issues from time to time. So
I'm on the wrong podcast. Tune in next week for the interesting topic that I wanted to talk about instead of the stale bullshit Chris wanted to talk about.
I'm going to pull up. We're going to go with this one, but it is kind of funny because I was sitting here preparing my thoughts on this other topic. We don't pre-plan for the podcast, but we do film a lot in a day. We don't really talk about it beforehand because we want the conversation to be more organic and natural. So you guys see kind of like our unfiltered versions, but then it does throw us off every now and then, especially when I'm sitting here thinking about the topic that we're going to film, I guess, after this now. And I have my outline pulled up and he starts, I was like, who died from this?
Die from winter skincare?
Okay. All right. Let's jump into silicone injections. Go ahead with your story there and I'll get my outline pulled up.
You know, that just screwed my train of thought all up. I thought I was doing so good. Because it is really interesting because you think, like, this goes back way back, like, what was it? Probably, I bet it's over 10 years ago when we had one of our trans patients that had silicone injections. And keep in mind, when we say silicone, there's no legal silicone injections in the United States. I don't know if it's legal.
There have been like silicone injections in the past. Right now, it's not a popular thing.
There are no current FDA silicone injections, though, in the U.S. And no current FDA approved silicone injections. So that means there are no current FDA, no current providers that can inject this.
But I want to clarify because some people will think, are going to pause and ask, what about silicone implants?
And there are different.
Yeah, they are different. So implants, the silicone implants are basically a solid sheet of some sort. It's not a liquid silicone injection. And so we're talking about the liquid silicone injections is what's not approved now that we can't get it this time of the year.
Yeah, it's like a gel.
And the one that we saw years ago had probably had silicone injections in the 80s maybe. And it caused like this chronic inflammatory condition and it migrated everywhere. There's no way to readily dissolve that, but because it's not in something encased in, it's like a solid sheet, like an implant that can be removed, this gel just works itself into tissue and it can migrate to areas that it was not injected. And the particular patient that we had first experience with this really had had it decades before and it had moved to so many different areas. And she had had, I don't know how many surgeries at that point.
Numerous
surgeries to extract it. And literally they would go in, they would make small incisions and try to extract the silicone gel and really had disfigured this individual who had been really pretty, well, but was still actually quite attractive, but definitely not the look that they were trying to achieve when they had the injections originally performed.
And this particular one was, a lot of it was in the face that was causing the issues, but they also do a ton of like body modification with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the particular case that kind of sparked all of this was, do you remember the old show Married with Children that had Al and Peg Bundy?
Yep.
So there was this sexy Latino that she was on there often. She was a stripper that like would show up every 3 or 4 episodes she was on there. And she had a butt augmentation done with silicone injections. And this particular injector was injecting in hotels or come to your home and do it. And she had already had one case of a patient dying from it. And then this celebrity died from it. And she died from a pulmonary embolism is what her cause of death was, but it was suspected that it was related to the silicone injections. So even like, you know, the BBLs that are done traditionally in physicians' offices with your own body fat, they hold, they're a, it's not a completely safe procedure. So certainly when you add on a non-approved injector, a non-approved product, and probably an unsanitary hotel room, I mean, odds are against you.
Yeah, I don't know how many people watch this show, but you know, I loved it. It's called Beauty in Black. It's a Tyler Perry production show. And they had a really prominent storyline on there, and it was involving some like female dancers that was doing stripping, and they were getting butt augmentations in a hotel by a non-medical provider. Now, it was a, you know, made for TV drama, which I, you know, got me sucked in. I actually loved the storyline. I liked the entire series. But it the amazing thing is you watch it and you think this is something just made for TV, and there's no way that this could be true, that it's way over dramatized. But in reality, in this industry, what we hear is stories like that that occur throughout the U.S. every single day.
Yeah. Reading here, this particular injector, she was referred to as the butt lady, but she was found guilty of second degree murder and practicing medicine without a license in October of 2025.
So she was actually went to trial convicted. So this is not just an accusation.
This is not an accusation. That's why I'm saying I'm reading this straight, straight from, yeah, I'm not accusing her.
I was like before.
I'm reading where she was convicted and she was sentenced. And so she is currently serving 15 years to life in prison for this treatment.
So why do you think patients or clients will actually agree to something like this?
I think there are probably a fair amount of people that, one, have had a good result or decent result, a result that was what they would consider to be satisfactory. I think cost is probably the biggest thing. You know, they can continuously get these injections until they reach their goal without having to go under anesthesia. They're not going into the hospital paying general anesthesia. The person travels through town. From the story that I was reading, she'd come into town every 3 or 4 months and host people at her hotel, inject people, and so people come back in for touch-ups.
So I think what's interesting is that we complain a lot. We've talked about this multiple times on our podcast. I teach about this in classes. And in our current political environment, there's a lot of talk about FDA regulation. And is the FDA and their approval process the most efficient? Is it reliable? Is it, should we be looking at this? And we look at the cost of medications, of products in the U.S. compared to other countries, and we know our cost is significantly higher. So there's a whole bigger picture here in terms of ways that, as you know, as Americans, that we should be having discussions and talking with our political representatives, our legislative body, about bringing some of these costs more in line with what people pay in the rest of the world. I agree with that. But the flip side of that coin is, in general, the FDA has, as cumbersome as it may be, has in general kept the public safe. And so we know that there have been some things that crop up here and there where a study's had to be retracted, or we find out that there's, after something has approval and we use it on a larger scale, that we have some issues that may have not been identified early and it gets pulled from the market. But in general, they do a really good job of making sure that the treatments and the medications that are approved are safe in the U.S. And we don't have some of these complication rates that we see in other places. But the downside is it's really costly as a provider to get the approved products through a legal channel. And so when patients then say, hey, I want this done, but I don't have the money to go and pay these tens of thousands of dollars to have the procedures, I believe that's one of the things that forces them down these pathways where maybe they don't even understand what they're gambling with. They don't understand they're gambling kind of with their life. So this is not just an undesirable aesthetic outcome where it may not look great, but they could actually have a life-threatening complication. So an infection, a pulmonary embolus, are things that they deal with for the next 20 to 30 years.
I was going to say, it's not even that. The ones that go well oftentimes come with many complications.
Years down the road.
And they may be fine for several years. There were some cases I read about, apparently mineral oil is fairly common. It may not cause necrosis immediately, and then they end up with fungal infections because you're being injected with something that's obviously a non-sterile product going in. And so it's really sad because, you know, people like are doing this thinking they're going to help look better and they feel like it's safe. The thing I was talking about, the lady said that she didn't sign any consent. She trusted the person because they said that it was going to be silicone, but still that's something that's not approved.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that that approval process is kind of the first step in ensuring safety, and it's the first step in protecting patients, but it also is one of the steps that creates the biggest barrier because the process that we have to go through to get something in the U.S. is so rigorous that it adds a lot of cost. Now, there are a lot of other reasons in there, and that's why I say it's kind of out of the scope of what we're going to talk about here on the podcast, but I do encourage patients to always ask, are you using an FDA-approved product? It may not always be on label, but I would like to know that my provider is using something that's been approved by the FDA, because if they're not, that alone tells you that they're willing to take a risk with their license. So when they're doing unapproved procedures using products that are not approved for use in the U.S., that tells you that that provider is willing to take a chance. And if they're going to take a chance with their own medical license, then what are they doing when it comes to taking a chance with your health, the safety of the procedure, and maybe even your life?
Right. I think that some of the things that I do to help my patients, and it's kind of by habit. I didn't necessarily start this because of this, but as we were teaching, especially a couple of years back, I think it's when we really started talking to people about vetting your, maybe when we started the podcast is when we started so much. But about vetting your provider, don't feel bad to ask your provider questions that, you know, we should, as providers, should openly provide this information. And so when I inject filler, you know, 9 times out of 10, we're in my treatment room. And so I leave the container, the filler out so the patient can see it. If I'm injecting Dysport or Botox or Xeomin or whatever, the container is sitting right there where the patient sees what I'm injecting. I always talk to them about why the filler was chosen. Whether a lot of them don't necessarily care. They trust us. They trust our judgment. But I talk to them and tell them, why are we using Restyl and Kiss versus Silk? Or why we chose that product? And so I do think it puts our patient at ease to know that we're completely transparent in how we got to the point of deciding what's the safest treatment.
I think that that's important, but I think also that we need a little bit of discussion around where the procedures are performed, because that's the other thing that when we read some of these news stories, I do believe they're sensationalized a little bit, and it makes it appear like just because they got it in the hotel room, it was wrong. And I often point out there are certain things, surgical procedures. We wouldn't do a joint replacement in a hotel room. It needs to be a special operating room with filtered air and all this sort of stuff for those procedures. But a lot of the injectables we do don't require anything special. And when you look at conferences that are performed across the U.S. every day from a variety of different specialists doing it, they're doing live injections and demonstrations in hotels, conference rooms. They're doing these in, right? And so this is a big ballroom full of people. Now, sometimes they will rope off an area. They'll put up some pipes and some curtains and do a video camera. So it's a smaller group of people in the immediate vicinity. But I want to point out that the location alone is not what makes this an unsafe procedure. It's that the provider, maybe they're not a licensed provider, so they don't have a location they could do the procedure, or that they're cutting corners and they're ordering things either from other countries or things that aren't approved for injection at all, and it should never be injected into a human. And that's all they have access to because they're not a medical provider, so that's what they're injecting into these. Now, when these providers get caught, you just read the example, it's not just, the thing is, this is not often medical providers. Are there medical providers that may not have licenses in this country? And so we also read some about people, some physicians coming from other countries, and they would do these weekend parties and then leave the country before anything could go wrong. So you kind of want to know, what is your follow-up plan with your provider should you have a complication? Because it's not always, but my point with that is oftentimes when we look at the criminal charges, they're like, how could that person do it and keep their license? Keep in mind, many of them are not licensed to start with. So they're practicing without a license. And that is why if they have no license, they can't get product legally. If they can't get product legally, then they go down this illegal pathway of getting things that shouldn't be injected. And that is why they end up, so many of these, when we read about them, they are in locations that seem strange. And I just wanted to point out that the location alone, because some patients are going to say, but wait a minute, I was a model for this and they did it in the hotel ballroom. And I'm like, yeah, we teach classes, we teach Botox, we teach filler. I go to many national meetings, international meetings, and we're injecting substances in these environments that really require what we call aseptic technique. So we're preparing the patient, but we don't require like special air filtration to do it. And they're not procedures where we're like cutting open and doing surgeries in those environments. So that's one thing just to consider. So ask the credentials of the provider. If they're doing it in something like that in that hotel room, then why are they doing it there? And what's going to be the plan if you have a complication? Do they have the necessary skills, training, and facility to follow up and treat those complications if you have one?
Moral of the story, it's best not to get your ass at the Holiday Inn. I know you said it's okay.
I didn't say it's okay. I'm just letting you know, I'm always trying to like make sure that people who have done something like this.
He's the yin to my yang.
But we do have approved substances, right? So fat injections are one of the BBLs, or fat transfer is a really popular one. So silicone is something that people are always thinking, like, can I get silicone in my butt? And I think we hear about that because of TV and news articles and things like that. In reality, we're not injecting those in the bodies. And in our practice, we're not doing fat transfers, but we have things that we inject like Sculptra or hyperdilute radius, but these are biostimulants. And it takes a lot of the product to get a result. And so, but they're not approved by the FDA. They're not approved in that area. They're approved injectables that we're using in a different part of the body. So we're using an FDA-approved product that we get through an approved distribution channel, and we're injecting it what we call off-label, a different area of the body. But it takes a lot. So they're expensive procedures. And I think that's why people then will choose not to go to someone that's licensed or doing legal things, because, you know, if we put 20 or 40 vials of injectable into that area, like of a Sculptra product, your cost is going to be at least, you know, $6,000-$10,000, depending on how many vials that we actually have to use to get the final result. And so we recognize that it's a costly procedure, and it's not something that is really in everybody's budget.
I think, just like we've talked about on so many of our previous episodes, vet your provider. Feel free to ask questions. If they are defensive, then try a different provider. There are safe ways for augmentation of your butt, and even silicone, because there are silicone implants, just like there's silicone breast implants. I actually have a patient who got silicone butt implants in Birmingham, Alabama, and is absolutely thrilled with them. So there are ways around it.
Guy or girl?
This particular one is female.
Okay.
I do have a guy that has...
I didn't know if he was about to break to me on live on the podcast that he was going for butt implants, because he's always talking about implants.
I would love to have me some pec implants and butt implants. But after seeing that little video yesterday, I got to take care of my skin quality before I do any kind of implants.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to talk about silicone today? Since it wasn't what we planned to start talking about.
No, I guess we'll talk about your boring topic now.
What is my boring topic?
I don't know. I just thought that this one was good.
Yeah, this one was a good one. My topic I thought we were going to talk about was the glamorous life of running a med spa. I guess you have to stay tuned for another episode to hear that, though.
While we're talking about that, I do want to plug something. Not with silicone. I don't want to plug it with that. But for any of you that are watching, or watch this on YouTube, or I know a lot of you are listening, but my boo has released his book. It's called The Med Spa Startup Playbook, and it's basically taking you from being an injector to CEO. And this is like, it's a cool business book. Chris put a ton of time and energy into it. I think the best chapter is like the first part where he talks about me. He talks very sweetly about me. So those are my favorite books. And
have you read Past the Acknowledgement?
I've read the Acknowledgement a lot. I read the Acknowledgement daily. But yes, I have read. So anybody that...
Did you learn anything from it?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about a KPI in there that I mentioned?
Can I tell you?
I'm testing him, right? He told me he read it. I'm like, tell me a chapter you read.
I don't know the chapter numbers.
He is not ready. He hears me talking about this all the time. He was so ready for me to finish this book because it was late nights, early mornings, lots of discussion. So he probably could have written the book with me, to be honest. So he doesn't have to read it because we've lived this life together for so many years to build our med spa. And really, it's a collection of somewhat our stories. So things that we've learned the hard way over the year. It also has some stories in there about practices that I've worked with on a consulting level and helped them change their numbers. And then it gives some actual strategy and some worksheets, real strategy about what you can implement right away to really start measuring the success of your med spa. And that's why I think that people find that they don't know how to measure that.
You keep saying med spa, and I do think it's tailored to med spas, but I also think it's for business owner, period.
Yeah. A lot of the KPIs business, you're right, it could be used, I would say, and even a little broader than med spa, specifically cash-based medical practices.
Mm-hmm.
But you could really use it even in something like an AutoZone.
Yeah. So if anyone is interested, certainly if you're in the clinic, we have them available here. And if Chris is present, I can, for an extra fee, probably get him to sign you one, write a sweet letter. But it's also available on Amazon Kindle.
Yeah, Amazon has it, and you can get it on the Kindle readers. It's available as well. So
anyway, that's my little plug.
Thank you for that. Thank you guys all so much for tuning in for another episode of Beauty and the Brain. We look forward to seeing you next week.
We'll see you soon.